at 18:30. Everyone is here in person or online except for Mark. Daniel, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Certainly.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, did everybody have a chance to look at the minutes from April 16th?
Yes, I vote that we approve April 16th, 2025 board member minutes.
I second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Kurt, I'm assuming that was a...
delayed.
Yeah, that was just a delay. Okay. It passes. Next is the firefighter recognition.
Okay, we got a few things to do to go through tonight. We're using the podium.
I saw that. I saw you standing over there when we got here.
Cody.
COVID.
Come on. Cody's getting his firefighter 2.
Let me take a picture for.
Do we need to have him slide the podium over so we can see you in the camera? In the camera.
This is good.
Oh, that camera?
Nah, we're good.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is just as a reference for Cody. How long has this been?
I was way too long. 8 years.
Hold on.
No, you haven't been in Recruit Academy for 8 years.
Oh.
You. Okay.
Yeah, I should have got it 8 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I got my other ones.
But something else to recognize is that we went through interviews and agility testing, and Cody will be one of our newest employees.
Very cool.
Congratulations. Mark is online.
Okay.
The
next recognition is also Firefighter 2. Landon, come on up. And so Landon is a firefighter at Dugwick. He's heavy in training. You want to make a speech? Cody, you make a speech.
Oh, working on the weekends like usual.
Working constantly.
Yes.
That's what we have Landon. So. Anyhow, just congratulations in general. Now we get to talk about something different. And this is a different something, not just a firefighter one, let me back up for a second. We've got just two quick announcements. This is Buck, stand up for just a second. You don't have to come up here yet, but just stand up. Buck is our first investigator. He went through UFRA's class, and he'll be recognized when we get his patches. To have an investigator on staff is big.
Yeah.
Kind of natural for a fire marshal, I would say, but yes. And then the other one is Jack. You stand up as well. Jack went through our Recruit Academy twice and tested and has obtained his Fire 1, Fire 2, HMA, and HMO.
Oh, wow.
So nice. We have yet to see his patches yet either, but he needs the recognition.
And you just completed the EMT.
Yeah.
EMT. Lord, that's a lot of letters.
Wow. It's a little busy.
It's a lot of letters.
Wasn't at home at all.
Yes, wasn't at home. And then the last thing to note is that Jack will also be one of our firefighters hired.
Oh, very cool.
Our most recent hired.
Welcome
nice.
Aboard.
Welcome aboard.
A shift and Cody will be going to C shift.
Very nice.
And once they're all hired, we'll have them all in again, and then we'll probably do a re-swearing in and work with that. But announcements. Okay. So now, this required me to write a little speech. And so we've got to take a few minutes. In our strategic plan and priority-based budget this year. We placed an emphasis on employee health and wellness. Unfortunately, this focus kind of relies on the officers to understand what it truly means for health and wellness of a firefighter. It's not just our mental health. It's not just our pay structure or our benefits. How far away we are from retirement. The manner in which we support each other. It's not just service recognition, appreciation from officers, critical incidents, stress debriefings, Class A uniforms, our Christmas party. It gets wrapped into physical fitness. It gets everything we do is somehow related to our health and wellness. To add those responsibilities to our officers who are already operating at a high level, expecting their crews to be ready to fight fires, that's a lot to put on the officers. And so the only way to really truly focus on that is to appoint somebody to say, you're going to do this. And if you give somebody, give a firefighter a task that they're not really interested in, they're going to do it poorly. And they're not going to be very interested in it. In March, we had Rachel Walton came to us at a staff meeting. She said that she was basically volunteering her services. She's very interested in mental health and wellness and overall firefighter fitness and helping our firefighters stay the healthiest they can be, mentally and physically. In fact, when she came to us and proposed not only that she could do this, but she proposed kind of a health and wellness officer type of position. And in the meeting, I had to ask, like, do we even have a position like that? No, we didn't. And we don't. We have what's called a health and safety officer. But the health and safety officer comes with officer one and instructor one or instructor two. And a whole lot of credentials behind it. And Rachel's not there. Rachel is at a second year, part-time second year firefighter, limited experience, and so she's got a good handle on kind of the firefighter health level, but some of the incident safety officer type of stuff isn't quite there yet. But having the health and safety officer allows us a little bit of leeway to define a new position. And so we've created a new position called the health and wellness officer. We will define all that. We're still working on all the details with Rachel and with Chief Brown and I working through all this. But I think it's important to recognize some of the work that she's doing, some of the work she's done, and to basically install her into that position. So you got to come up here. And Dan, if you'd come up here, because we're going to get you to change out her badge. So what do we put her at? The health and safety officer has a position at a level of the captain. So that is something she gets to kind of work to attain over the course of years. But for right now, we're bringing you in as a lieutenant. This is for you, Dan.
Congratulations.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Good work.
Thanks for stepping up.
Okay. Good. Unless you want to do the chief report.
You don't have to do it from behind the podium.
I think that's next, right? forward?
Yes.
Yeah.
Our current volume is 476. That's 130 since the last board meeting, running right at 4 per day. Last year on this date, it was 470 calls, so we're up 6 from last year. And as just a point of data, I always like to notice how many times we go out to I-80. I have 19 in the past 30 days, so significant. We had one structure fire in Howell Street. Now, that was slightly before the last board meeting, but I wasn't here for it. And I just wanted to note that, you know, when it comes to quick response, I mean, that is why we employ firefighters. And they were there. They limited it to one unit right in the middle. And that's a huge accomplishment. Just being able to say that and Buck did all the investigation on that one. And, you know, I even called John Stout and told him, you know, it's because of the stuff that he put into play so many years ago that that's why it was saved. You know, it's fantastic work, just on multiple levels. Two Grantsville reservoir calls, two fatalities on April 25th, and then we went out there again on the 11th. Once again, people are boating, swimming out there with no life jackets. So, vehicle fire, auto aid with 2L City up Middle Canyon. We had a tractor trailer fire on I-80 at 47. Captain Unsworth and his crew were out there on that for, 7 hours?
5 hours.
5 hours? As you all have seen, we've done multiple duck rescues, so that's been big in the community. Weather-related incidences from wind, we had a skydiving incident that broke both legs of the instructor, or one of the instructors out there. He came through a fence, so that bad day. We've been so busy that Chief Brown and I even responded to a broken arm call. accomplishments. Start dates for 4 new firefighters, June 1st. We ran them through national standards, agility testing, interviews, and they're doing their physicals now. Wildland Fire had our engine academy this past weekend in Vernon. Had 10 out of 170 people were ours. Chipper days, we've hired seasonals. Joey Menino. Yes, if you recognize Joe Menino's name, that's his daughter. She's one of our seasonals this summer. The Recruit Academy is coming to an end. Would you like to give a quick speech about that? It's okay. I'm sure you want it to be done.
And you saw my results.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No doubt.
That's the worst part.
Rest of the county's gone, but it's not a...
Yeah.
They've given the rest of the county their results? And
yeah.
How does that work?
We'll be
last. Tulsa County, I don't think, has their results. I think only Grantsville and Tulsa City got their results.
Okay.
They usually come in at a batch.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's kind of odd.
Yeah.
Yeah, they usually come in a batch, unless it's North Tuella.
Yes. Yeah.
What did you do to you for us?
We've done a lot.
Kaylee was naughty.
Call them and tell them, hey, do your job.
No, they do not.
Yeah. Let's see. Field days. We just finished field days. Excelsior, Stansberry, and Rose Cranes. And those all three went pretty well, I think. Planning coming up. Tooele County is opening their South Rim station on the 31st. Graduation for Recruit Academy is June 3rd. There's a firefighter fitness challenge coming in Tooele City that we've all been invited to on June 7th. And as a bonus for the summer, we have our ISO survey engine. Yay.
What are they going to drill us on?
Running the drafting and all that stuff, that's all gone away. They don't do that anymore. If you can't prove it by response times and your data records management, they don't count it. So we got a lot of weird stuff. Not that. Okay, any questions?
Thanks, Chief. All right, Fire Marshal Monthly Report.
So I think I'll go easy on you because I think you'll get to hear from me again later on in the meeting. The biggest thing that I probably need to bring before you is Ertis City and Lake Point City, when they establish themselves as a community, they have to redo all the business inspections. And this week we get to celebrate the establishment of Ertis City as a new city, and so all other home-based businesses are needed to be expected. So we're busy, but things are going well.
Thanks. Okay. All right. Grant Projects Monthly Report. Kim.
Chief introduced Joey, our addition, and then Jackson is our addition as well. And so Jackson will try to introduce at the next meeting. That's the Community Wildfire Defense Grant, and we will get them trained on going out and doing some community surveys of homes and get them, they're getting registered for community events. And so we'll get community information and education out about wildfire for them. Safer Grant, new volunteers, I've held off on bringing those on until the new firefighters coordinate. I just didn't want to put too much of a burden on any of the staff as bringing in new volunteers and they're getting some new employees. So we'll probably do interviews the end of this month or the beginning of next. So probably more like beginning of next for those positions. We still have quite a few that have applied, and actually some that are quite qualified, so hopefully we can get those up and going. On another note, the CBDG that we tried to apply for and the surveys that we were above the dollar amount of the community. So Chief and I are looking at CIB, and so that's why you guys got the notice about the public hearing next week. I'll let Chief talk about it, but if there's anything that needs to be added to that, I will add to that. I was just hoping that we could possibly have impact funding be added to that, and he'll talk about, actually, that's not the right one. Sorry, that's the CMAP one, so strike that. But the CIB, we'll try to go for a ladder truck, and we'll try to go for the Lakeview Fire Station. And then on another note, the CMAP grant is the one that we will look at and see if we can do impact fees towards it. So that one's moving forward. That one is through UDOT, and it's through the transportation. And it is kind of similar to the DARA grant, so the Type 1-3 engine. So if we retire another engine, we can possibly get a ladder truck. And so Chief and I are working through that and that application process, and we've got to have, at the end of the month, what apparatus that we will kind of lay to rest, and then a new apparatus, a fire ladder truck, which helps buck with some of the new taller buildings. We'll try to get that. There's upwards of $450,000 that we can get from the CMAC funding. Years ago, when I was with the county, some of the CMAC funding went towards the underground tunnel. So it just kind of helps with air mitigation. So we just have to prove that we're going to change some of the air quality through a new engine. So we're working on that. And then I think that's it, isn't it, Chief?
Not quite.
Oh, no. We got a grant. That's right, we got a grant. We got an outdoor recreation grant. So for the rescue vehicles for out for recreation, so we got $66,000 that can go towards a side-by-side, a four-wheeler, an enclosed trailer, and another trailer, and then equipment on that. So we get $66,000 towards that. We're going to try to look at the contracts that are with purchasing, and some of the local businesses are on those contracts. So we'll look at soliciting out that way and seeing if we can get those products, but probably won't do that till June.
the crews have already said that they want to be posted out at Knowles during our high traffic or high volume
vacation weekends.
Yeah, so Memorial Day, Labor Day, July 4th, Pioneer Day, all those they want to just sit out there with their side by sides and wait for people to wreck.
Break their own.
Anyway, that's all.
All right, thank you. All right, it's our first chance for public comment. Anyone?
No.
All right. Okay, bills review.
Did everybody have a chance to go through last month's bills?
Yes.
Any questions?
No.
Okay, thank you.
We have no contracts review, no old business, new business, NTFD, CIB applications. We just talked about that. For the Lake Point Fire Station and the new ladder truck.
We just wanted to make sure that if you had any questions regarding that, that you were prepared for next week for public hearing. Kim will be here. I will not be here. And Chief Brown will be here. Buck will be here. So we've got it spooled up, so we have lots of answers for you, but just want to make sure you didn't have any questions.
How much is a ladder truck?
Right. Ladder truck, a new one, is about $1.5 million. And so we're applying for a $5 million station and a $1.5 million ladder truck. CIB funding is all related to mining and extracts and sales tax for the state of Utah. So there are, when you go in front of the board, there are two options. One, they can give you a grant and pay for it all, or they can give you a loan. The city of Tooele City just got their new station funded through a CIB loan at 3%. Our intention is that if they offer us a loan, we were going to turn it down. Because we just can't afford it. If they offer us a grant, we'll take it. And it is a quarterly application. So if they offer us a loan now, that doesn't mean that they won't offer us a grant in the next quarter, depending on how you know, up and down the whole fund is for the CIB board. And they may come to the end of the year and need to spend some money, and so they give us, you know, half or whatever. I don't really know how it all works, but we're going to find out. So I just want to make sure you guys knew what we were applying for, what the application was to do, and it's really just to work in the Lake Point area.
And is it two separate? You're going to apply one for the station and one for the truck, or are they combined?
Combined.
Okay. They're combined.
They're combined.
Does the application stay open or every quarter, or do you have to?
We'll probably have to reapply.
Yeah.
Does that mean any public hearing?
That's right.
Yes. Yep. We'll probably have to do public hearings quite a number of times on this.
Awesome.
But, that's okay. Our community will hear that loud and clear of stuff we need.
Okay. All right. Tax anticipation note for 2025.
Do you want to talk about that, or?
So as you recall, last year we did apply for a tax anticipation note for $475,000, and that was to get us through the cash flow
right. For
the remaining of the year. we have started the calculations for that for this year, and I sent them into Zions, and without counting the capital projects fund, we, according to the calculations, it will not show a deficit. However, we have sent a message in to Alex to see if it's appropriate for us to include the capital projects since they are funded from the general fund.
Right.
Because if that is the case, then we will run into a deficit. Probably around September-ish. So we are waiting to hear back on that, but we are still leaving it open and anticipating that we will still move forward with that.
Okay.
So we're hoping that we can have everything done by the next board meeting.
Awesome.
And get things in place that we did last year.
Very cool. Okay, cool. Thanks for doing that. It's our next public comment section. Anything? Anyone? That was a quick one. I mean, it was quick between those. Okay, action items. Resolution 2025-12, approval of the ordinance 10-2025, residential fire protection ordinance.
Excuse me, can I make a comment?
Yes.
I'm at home and I've got a different computer than me, so my name is Ryan Garrett. I'm working with D.R. Horton. And I don't know if it's the time to do this, but I was made aware of the ordinance number 010-2025. I believe that's the one you're about to talk about. Is that right, or am I in the wrong spot?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. I just wanted to kind of make a couple of comments. I can appreciate your hard work and dedication. And obviously, safety is the priority with everything that you guys do and preparedness. As we look to develop and have done some nice projects in Tooele County and other places, looking through this, and of course, I'm not an attorney, I have to say that, but when I read, for example, in Section 3 of this ordinance, all new residential subdivisions consisting of four or more parcels within North Tooele Fire District, I'm wondering if this is just really broad, like it seems to read to me. For example, if somebody had a town-owned project with maybe a couple of buildings of four each or something like that, like even one building of four, if something happened in one property, I could see some ramifications that the entire structure could burn and be affected. However, as another, you know, possibility, say in Ertis City where you're, if you're trying to do a single residential dwelling, as far as I'm aware, you can maybe go to RR1, which is a 1 acre minimum for a single building or, you know, a residential single family dwelling. And so my thought is, wouldn't it make sense to consider, and maybe you have, but perhaps if something were maybe a half an acre or greater, that something like this might not apply. Because if I've got a house and it burns down, heaven forbid, and you guys have the trucks and safety to at least to contain that or maybe let it burn, saving everybody. Hopefully none of this ever happens. I'm not sure that a neighbor with another 1 acre as a minimum, for example, that property would be affected much at all. That seems like a pretty, you know, a big, vast space between one single family dwelling on an acre and a neighbor that's one single family dwelling, even with setbacks. It still seems like really unlikely that one fire would naturally affect it, like maybe in the early example of more of a dense product. So I wanted to put that up for consideration and wonder if there's some thoughts on that or some deliberation. And I'm apologizing. I only heard about this yesterday, but those are the comments I wanted to enter into.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you wouldn't mind, can I address those concerns?
Of course.
But you need to get in the camera so that he can see it.
I did, actually.
Yeah, he is.
Ryan, are you able to hear?
Oh, I am. Can you see me? Maybe you can't.
Yeah, we can see you.
We're good.
Okay.
So my name is Buck Peck. I'm the fire marshal for North Tooele Fire District. I am the author of this ordinance. Okay. Yes, the consideration was made about density, and the reason that I wrote it as a subdivision was so that because of the density is not going to affect how we respond to a fire. The subdivision is going to affect how we respond to the fire. And so that was the thought process of going through that. The subdivision, so if I have a parcel of land and I subdivide it into four or more properties, what I put on those four or more properties doesn't really affect how I respond. If I only subdivide a single piece and put a townhome on there, then our fire department is going to respond that way. If I respond with their normal response, if I have a subdivision and I subdivide four or more lots and I put townhomes on each of those, then you can see how my response is going to be greatly affected because the demands to the infrastructure are going to be that much greater. So that was my thought process on that.
That does make sense, but at the last part when you had mentioned it, it seems like though there is an occasion like the latter part of what you said where there would be a different response. Say there was one subdivision of townhomes and there's a townhome building, and then fairly nearby in the same subdivision there's another, say a fourplex or another townhome kind of structure.
So, but that's not going to be the same subdivision, right? You're going to take a lot and you're going to subdivide that lot into four or more. And if you do that, then that's when this ordinance would take effect.
But are you saying just four individual lots? Is that kind of what you're trying to break out? You're saying
yes, into so four? If I have a lot and I subdivide that lot into four or more, then this ordinance would come into play.
And I could be wrong, but it feels like though in lots of places there are, say, like there's a 40-acre piece and somebody decides, you know, I want to make a nice little affordable home area for some kids, and so I want to, you know, maybe make a more affordable unit. Even if you put down quarter acres or half acre properties, or in IRTA, for example, I think it's the 1 acre minimum. If you had 4 1-acre properties in a four, you know, you had a larger property and you subdivided to a 1 acre minimum. So now with this example, we have 4 1-acre parcels. If everybody has a house on those and there's a fire, I'm not sure one fire in house number one is going to necessarily naturally affect house number two that sits on another full acre.
It's not four structure to structure ignition. That's not what it's for.
No. Yes. So to your point, it's to bring in infrastructure, right? We're trying to, if you're building the four homes,
yes,
then great. This is, we don't have, so what, and maybe this is premature, but when I talk about the ordinance, I'm going to state the why. The why is we need to prevent events that have occurred in Palisades and Colorado, and sure, we don't have the infrastructure here in Tula County, so there's no fires, there's no hydrants. And what this does is the precedence was set in Draper at South Mountain when the fire marshal ordered that any homes that were being developed there would have a sprinkling system. We've gone and one step further and allowed to have a community have a shared well or a shared tank and pump to provide that fire suppression.
Does each one have to have its own tank and its own service, including sprinklers? So sprinklers in an individual house?
No.
As written
in the ordinance, it will be built to code. So you can have a single fire suppression system that if this subdivision has four houses within the ordinance, International Fire Code codified language, which is 150 feet. If they're within that 150 feet of the fire hydrant, you can have a single cul-de-sac on one tank and pump.
On that, well, under section, and I could be in the wrong place, section 5, fire and protection requirements in the ordinance, what it shows a draft and that I got off the internet. It looks like under B, alternative compliance. Is that what we're talking about? Because that looks like it reads under I, all new residential structures within subdivisions shall be equipped with a residential sprinkler system design installed in accordance with that. And then in 2, it says each residential structure shall be equipped with an individual water storage tank.
So that's, yes, that's the alternative. You can have a single community have a fire suppression system, or each individual house needs to have 150-gallon with their individual fire suppression sprinkling system.
See. Okay, when I was just looking through it, I wanted to comment on it. I'm a little bit concerned about the cost, as you know, those get
So
there are hard costs, and then thereafter, you mentioned Cali wildfires in different states. Are these going to be then managed and upgraded by North Tooele Fire District or a government entity or something like that? Or is the burden upon the homeowners to thereafter, you know, fix a fire hydrant or some other sort of apparatus for the system that's being asked or required if this is passed?
So this will not be a burden on North Tooele Fire. This will be up to the individual homeowner or the developer. And to take that one step further, we have had talk with the water service agencies, and they will not bring these systems under their control if infrastructure is brought to their to the doorsteps.
So are you talking like the Spilsbury Improvement District? Spilsbury Park?
Whichever service agency that is, or whichever water company that is.
So they're saying no matter, I didn't quite understand, sir.
The point is that the water companies, if you put in a hydrant system for the whole community, the water company is not necessarily required to tap into your water infrastructure and adopt that infrastructure.
I think that's right, and I feel like that again leads to another potential. I'm not trying to play devil's advocate. I'm just trying to think out loud a little bit. But that still seems like that puts a burden ultimately on the property owner.
Absolutely.
And the management thereof. And if somebody doesn't have money down the road, you know,
so then
what if you talk about fires? If they're trying to say, if for some reason people don't have the means to upkeep it, and it becomes for some reason it deteriorates, or that its deferred maintenance occurs. I mean, it seems like that could potentially be a 20-year in the future issue, don't you?
So your home is your castle. Once you receive your certificate of occupancy, I do not have the right to enter your home. We understand that is a point of contention or contingency, but we cannot keep allowing on a daily basis. I'm having individuals who ask to build a structure that is on a 1-acre lot, and they have to meet the requirements of the WUI code, which is 25 feet from the property line and 50 feet from the house. They don't understand why they have to do that, because they built this beautiful new home and they don't have any fire suppression. So this is to help offset that, to give us defensible space and to give us the water necessary to defend their home.
Yeah. No, you make some points. I can see you're coming from. I appreciate you sharing those thoughts. It just seemed a little bit perhaps broad in its application, where if it's a townhome project or some sort of multifamily, let's say, versus, you know, 1 acre, half an acre minimum, it seems like there might be, it might not one size applies to all based on the size of the structure and the relative building to the land ratio that, you know,
so one
neighbor having issues might not be this, doesn't necessarily mean everybody does. Whereas if it's in a more dense product, it seems like that would be naturally more the case, that one problem would be for everybody in that structure.
So again, I understand your concern, and that is why the ordinance is written the way it is, to be attached to the subdivision of the lot itself, not what is constructed on the property.
I appreciate the clarity. I'm not sure. I mean, with respect, I'm not sure I agree with that, but I do understand what you're saying. So my comments for today, just to, you know, if potentially could be appealed or something, it feels like it might add some extra costs and maybe effectively stop growth or limit growth.
The extra cost is not going to, the extra cost is going to be offset, because if you're subdividing into these subdivisions that do not have the infrastructure, then your building permits are going to be much less. And so that cost is going to be this. If you were to make a subdivision in Salt Lake, for example, you're going to have a much higher cost up front for your building permits, and because that infrastructure is provided. What this does is it puts that responsibility of that infrastructure back on the individual who's making that subdivision, so that that infrastructure can take place. Because the infrastructure doesn't exist, we have to develop that. It will be the responsibility of this person who is subdividing to bring that infrastructure there. So the cost really isn't there. It's just we're moving money from one place and putting it into another.
And which ultimately go for
really
the developer.
Additional cost.
That would go from the developer then to the end, the home purchase price for the buyer, potentially. But exactly, I understand.
Exactly as it is currently if you make a subdivision in any place that has the infrastructure.
I see. Well, thank you for taking the time to let me make some comments.
Absolutely.
All right. Buck, is there anything else you want to discuss about the ordinance?
Are we to that point?
Yep.
Or are we still
at public? We're at action items.
Yeah. Okay. So if you wouldn't mind bringing up my slides. So for your information, we had a public hearing. In that public hearing, before we had the public hearing, Ms. Cassandra helped me with a notification to the public. We placed a half-page ad or a full-page ad?
It was about a half-page ad.
About a half-page ad to our those individuals in our jurisdiction, so that we were upfront and everyone was aware of what we were planning. The first question I would like to answer is why, the why. We talked a little bit about the fire and the Palisades. I put this up here not to show what was at fault, but I wanted to show what happened when there was no infrastructure. I don't care why there wasn't hydrants, but the hydrants were dry. And we saw a daisy chaining event where fire was going from home to home to home to home. We also saw this in Colorado, Hawaii. It's, as you know, we are in the wildland-urban interface, and it is very tenuous for us to be able to stop that propagation of fire from one to one, from one to another. Fire can double, as you know, fire can double every 30 to 60 seconds. Rapid growth influence factors by type, so on and so forth. This is the why. We must be able to prevent the fire from going from one to another. Being in the wildland urban interface, this is the 2006 version, the adopted version for us. Any detached structure must be located within 50 feet of a habitable space. Due to encumbrance, you cannot build a structure within 25 feet. 25 plus 25 is the 50 feet. So I can't build a structure within 25 feet of my property line. This is causing confusion for our citizens, those people that we're responsible for, because they'll look up city code, and city code says that they can have a structure 10 or 15 feet, depending on which jurisdiction, from the property line. They, in many cases, they start the construction. Many a cement pad has been poured, and then they go to get their building permit and come to find out they can't put it 10 to 15 feet from the property line because they don't have the fire hydrants and they're in the wildland urban interface. So they have the bad news of me telling, or they have the bad news of me telling them that they have to move their cement pad or not build their building or create the 1 hour fire resistant construction. All of these factors have led me to overwhelmingly feel the need that we must be able to protect our citizens. To do so, I would like to. I think there's more slide. So to do so, I'd like to write the ordinance that requires. A tank and a pump for every home that is in the subdivision. If the developer chooses to do it so that there is only a single hydrant, then they would be grouped within a cul-de-sac, as long as they're within that 150 feet of the fire hydrant. That's great. If they choose to have their development be five acre lots or something that expands the distance, then they're going to have to put the hydrants in every 200 feet. Alternatively, they can put in, which is section 5B, alternatively, they can put in sprinklers into the home with a 750-gallon tank. This would take the fire, most likely, based on statistics like this. It would take it to a single room in contents. Without sprinklers, the cost of the fire is $45,000. With sprinklers, you're only looking at about $2,000. This is a good ordinance to help us help our citizens. Any questions for me?
I have one question, perhaps. Ryan Garrigan, thank you. Is there a cost average per house?
What's that?
Is there a cost average to install that per house?
That would be up between that. That's not information that I'm going to have available. That depends on which system they choose, what they decide to do, how large a pump. That's size of the home. That's not information that I can provide you.
I mean, is there like it's over 500 but under 50,000, or is it like 10 grand? Do we have any general idea for like a half an acre house?
Again, that's not information that I'm going to be able to provide you.
Okay. Yeah, that's yeah. Per square foot, 80 cents to 4.
No, we had this before. It was, for, it was like Adobe over Lake Point. That was for 10 homes, the larger subdivision. We had this in place 2 or 3 years. They changed the county commission. County commission came in and changed the county ordinances, which kind of made us null and void here. We're going to have to stay on top of things with those guys to make sure that what we say goes.
So how we can stay on top of that is I review every subdivision that comes through, whether it's in Herta, Lake Point, or the county. And so I have that opportunity to, if there is this subdivision, then I can require, and if this ordinance passes, I can require those actions to be taken.
Well, we did too, Buck. We stayed on top of it with an iron fist, but we still got beat around the corner on it. And our attorney told us we didn't have a leg to stand on. So that's this is I think it's a great ordinance. I think it's a great ordinance you're doing. I just want to make sure that this doesn't bite us twice.
So we have the ability to. When you say that we don't have a leg to stand on.
It was shy of going to court, and we weren't going to win. Our attorney told us that.
So have we taken it to the attorney to see if it's, as Scott says, we have a leg to stand on?
So
because the lawsuit is...
Yeah.
I mean, when I heard all this, I'm like, man, we got to table that until we get more info.
So it's our responsibility to enact... everywhere in the code
to enact ordinances, but if we do it, are we setting ourselves up for a lawsuit?
One of the things that we have to do is for example, a turnaround in Tooele County is 96 feet. Mm-hmm. In Salt Lake, it's 104. And the difference is because our apparatus are smaller than their apparatus. We don't have a tiller yet. So our code is different than code other places. In the code, it states that the authority having jurisdiction can dictate those things that are necessary for his jurisdiction. This is one of the, because we don't have the infrastructure, this is one of those things that we need to dictate that we are able to suppress the fire. Just as precedence has been shown at South Mountain and Draper, where the fire marshal ordered every home to have a sprinkling system, we've given them an allowance to build in, to have the developer bring in a hydrant system. But South Mountain, every home was required to have a sprinkling system. So we could do something like that if it's objectionable to bring in that hydrant system.
Well, Park City was way ahead of Salt Lake County on that.
Absolutely.
But so, no, we're not telling you no. We're just...
The question was asked, has an attorney taken a look at this?
No, sir.
Okay. But I think we need to table it and then contact our attorney and have them review it to see if... I mean, if we say yes, let's do it, and then we get sued, are we gonna be out more money than we're gaining? Are we gonna be out? Is it gonna be?
It's not a matter.
Not even money.
It's life.
Are we correct? I understand that, but are we deal with money issues and life safety issues, and are we putting something in that's going to be detrimental to us in the end?
There was some... So we asked Rachel. I think her answer was you guys adopt whatever you want to adopt. I don't think she had any really review of it. It wasn't this particular ordinance. It was another ordinance.
And also, this ordinance has been in front of the Erta City attorney and also the Lake Point attorney. I've taken this to them and said, I'm going to do this. This isn't a surprise to anyone. It's in the long run, this is going to be beneficial because their insurance rates are going to be lower because they have the fire hydrant that's within the 150 feet. You have to mark that on your insurance. This is a long-term plan, right? This is something that is going to be not only is it life safety, but it's cost effective.
Well, Buck, we're not arguing on any of that.
I understand.
This had happened to us before. It was overturned at the county level before. I want to make sure that once you get this in place, I want it written in stone, so this doesn't happen.
Table for a month.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm not arguing the point. I'm trying to give you that confidence that we've done the work.
Was there any concern or any issues with either one of those attorneys from Erta City or Lake Point?
No, sir. Okay.
So I'm going to propose on Resolution 2025-12 that we table it. We contact our attorney and have them review it and get an opinion from them on it.
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Buck, this isn't going against you. Please don't take it that way.
I don't feel any personal offense. That's great. With the more eyes that look at.
Well, you can sit down with our attorney and you present your side of it, and I'm sure they'll agree with you. But I want to make sure that what happened before won't happen again. Once you've gone to all this work, I want it set in stone.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Is there any opposition?
No.
I didn't think so. I thought it was unanimous. Okay.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry, my thing went dead. Next is the approval of the 2025 first quarter bills.
I vote that we approve. Motion that we approve the 2025 first quarter bills for January, February, and March.
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Any opposed? Sorry, aye. I jumped in there. Okay. Next is the board calendar.
Next Wednesday, 6 p.m., there's a public hearing for the CIB application that was discussed today. I believe we've heard from everyone. Mark will be online correct? Is there anyone that will not be
I
here?
I should be here, but if not, I'll be on the telephone. Depends on where I'm at in the county.
Okay. I'll be there.
We'll have the Teams link available for that.
So. Okay. I'm still trying to get coverage so I can be there, but I'll at least do it on Teams.
Okay. And it's here?
It is here.
Great.
Yes, at 6 o'clock. Starting next week on June. Is that next week?
2 weeks.
No, 2 weeks. I'm like, whoa. 2 weeks on June 2nd is the board election candidate filing period. So,
who's up for election?
Me and Mark.
Yes. Okay. So if anyone wants to apply to be on the board, that has to be done during June 2nd through June 9th. Otherwise, they can only be done as a write-in candidate. Okay. The applications will be here in our office. They must be done in person, cannot be done in line. You have to be a registered voter and you also have to be a resident of our district. If you have anyone, if anyone asks you about it, please let them know. We will not be here on the weekend, but normally the filing period is June 1st through the 7th, but because the 1st and 7th are on a weekend, the state changed the dates for special districts to go through the weekend and on Monday. So Saturday and Sunday, filing will not be available.
Okay.
June 18th, that's our third Wednesday, will be our next board meeting. Here at 6:30, as usual, we will have our audit review and then anything else that comes up. So is there any issues with that date?
Not for me.
That we know of right now. Okay. And then the next one after that is July 16th. That's also the third Wednesday in July. Okay. District events, as we said, June 3rd, Recruit Academy graduation. That will be at 7 p.m. at Tula City number 3, the brand new station. That same week on Saturday, the 7th, is the Tula County Firefighter Challenge. First annual, so it sounds really exciting. So,
do we know how many we're sending or not yet? Or
we're guessing. I don't know. Like six.
Yeah, I do know that they said that there will be a barbecue for first responders and their families.
Just remember on the old trophy, there's only one fire department's name on that.
That is true. When we had a challenge before, North Will is the only one that won it in the past. So, and I think we still have the trophy.
We want every one of them,
yeah.
Too.
That's so awesome.
Starting in June, we have various community days. June, Lake Point. July, Erta. August, Stanbury. So watch for announcements on those. And we will participate as we can when requested. June 20th, 21st is the National Volunteer Fire Council Summit, and Kim Clausing will be presenting at that. So we're really excited about that.
Where's it at?
And where's it at?
At the Marriott downtown.
Oh, you don't even get to go somewhere?
You don't even get to go
all the way to Salt Lake City? That's exciting.
Yeah. I guess it's overnight. You can stay overnight.
Yeah. And then in August, the 911 bowl fundraiser, that's for those that don't know, the football game to fundraiser for their person that they've nominated for the year, and this year it's at Stansbury High, and we usually have a couple of firefighters that participate in the game, and I'm guessing that we'll probably be providing some kind of a standby, maybe sometimes
we'll work with Mark.
So, yeah,
Mark.
But just so you're aware, 6 to 9 p.m. on the 23rd.
Excellent. So. Okay, great. Last chance, public concerns.
Just one comment about what came up earlier with the county, and I don't know if this will make a difference, but to consider prior when that happened, we were a special service district under the county. Yeah. We are no longer. So I don't know if the county could still have the same effect as they did before.
Okay. So, awesome.
Okay.
Anyone else? Okay. It looks like we do need a closed session.
Yes. I would recommend that you adjourn the meeting
okay.
and then go into the closed session, but please make sure you do a vote for the closed session.
Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I motion that we adjourn the meeting for May 21st,
2025. Okay. Second. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, we are adjourned at 19:30.
We still need to do a vote to go into the closed
session. Okay.
Oh, I motion that we go into a closed session for discuss the character, professional competence, and physical or mental health of an individual.
Okay.
It's Chief Mountain.
Yeah. Do we have a second?
That's what that said.
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Okay.
If you'd like,